What's up, you guys? Sean Rossap. This is the Fightful Backstage Report podcast. 20-25 minutes of some exclusive news that Fightful broke that you've probably seen over Fightful Select. But we add a little bit more color to it. We give you stats, contract, injury updates, all that good stuff. Let's go ahead and get into it. I use the Fightful Wrestling Weekly as the guide for this show. So let's talk some WWE news. We're fresh off of SummerSlam. WWE made the move to return to live broadcasts of Raw and SmackDown at the Amway Center. The word that we heard from wrestlers thus far has been unanimously positive, as they're hoping that this results in shorter filming days for them. Some weeks of late, filming has continued past 1 a.m., and wrestlers and staff have been there all day long. There is some concern over the unpredictable nature of the pandemic and how those could affect the shows, but everyone that Fightful spoke to actually heard the news online, and there were a couple of people that were like, this is the first I'm hearing of live, this is the first I'm hearing of the Amway Center. They actually learned about some of this by watching Twitter feeds and news sites and the like, and that seems to be the common theme. WWE does not want leaks out there. No big surprise, they kept Roman Reigns hidden and a secret. They did not want that information out there. That isn't exactly groundbreaking or anything like that. I don't blame them for doing that, because, quite frankly, a lot of information has gotten out there. Ever since everything has been kept in close quarters, there have been more leaks, quite frankly, even though there's been a giant reduction in staff. Now, the reaction to the Amway Center and going live, this was a far cry from the reception that we heard back in April when WWE made the effort to go live again. And this is because it was well before WWE did testing. And that wasn't something that a lot of wrestlers openly complained about, but privately, they complained about it an awful lot. And we were still very new to the pandemic in March, April. But they were just doing temperature checks, and that had a lot of the roster worried. Roman Reigns wasn't coming to work during then. 2 months later, they've got their testing shored up, and he's back, and that is a major get for WWE. That is humongous. And the fact that they're testing, the fact that they moved to the Amway Center, they got out of that performance center, and they reduced the number of people that really even needed to be there, I think that goes a long way. Speaking of the performance center, I've been speaking to a lot of the recently released and departed talent about who helped them out the most in NXT. And Norman Smiley, the former Norman Smiley, got a ton of praise. Aiden English credited him with helping him get his start in pro wrestling and pitching for him to get into NXT. Aiden had worked as a wrestler for a few months and was able to land a WWE deal without a tryout because of a really good recommendation from Smiley. Terry Taylor was a person that English said that he butted heads with a lot, but he has a lot of love for. I know that Terry Taylor has a really bad rap. A lot of it stems from just old performances and attitude clashing and stuff like that. But Stevie Ray also making some pretty wild accusations out there on Terry Taylor. But I've been hearing actually a lot of praise for Terry Taylor in that regard. I'm told that Terry Taylor listens to ideas that are pitched and tries to work with people to make them the best that they can be. And Terry Taylor, according to Aiden English, said it reminds you of a parent because you'll learn a lesson without even realizing that you're learning one. And there were things that English would think are dated and not a good idea, but then when he'd execute them, he'd look back and realize that Terry Taylor was right. This is something that John Moxley in the past has told me about Michael Hayes, that Michael Hayes would say, hey, don't do that, or hey, do this. And Moxley would be like, nah, I think that's lame. And then when the lesson was learned, John Moxley was like, damn, he was right. He was right. I got to start listening to him more. English also put over Arn Anderson and Billy Gunn as well, who are both over in AEW now. So, I mean, by the looks of it, AEW picked up a couple of good ones in Billy Gunn and Arn Anderson. Thunderdome, WWE audience tested by having a series of monitors set up. Some of them were duplicated and tested onto other seats instead of having a different screen on every one, like we ended up seeing. The ring was already set up for SmackDown by Wednesday afternoon, and the staff was told to keep everything top secret at the risk of their jobs if they leaked photos. Photos still came out. That's just the nature of the thing. I still think they have a lot of work to do with Thunderdome, but I think it's better than the Performance Center. But that is, you know, it's a very polarizing subject right now. there are some people that preferred the Performance Center. I kind of prefer the way that they're going. I spoke a little bit about the pandemic era and the mention of people that had sat out. Riddick Moss had noted recently that he sat out of WWE action for several months as he cares for a family member that is at advanced risk of COVID-19 due to cystic fibrosis. Fightful learned that he was actually a favorite of Paul Heyman, and that Paul Heyman kind of sat him out and was like, you know what, you should probably just sit this one out. If there's any heat on it, I'll take it. There was no heat on it, from what I understand. Everybody understood why Riddick Moss needed to not be there, and that he had a family member that was under his care that was high risk. So from what I understand, there was no heat on him in that regard. However, he is back, and while there were ambitious plans for him before, I don't know that there are that ambitious of plans for him now. At the time, Moss was 24-7, and WWE respected his wishes and created a story to get the title belt off of him, which is where you saw him lose it while he was out running. That's why we saw the unconventional outdoor title switch back in March, just a couple weeks after the move to the PC. But there were big plans for Riddick Moss, at least in the mind of Paul Heyman, from what I understand. Paul Heyman was very high on Riddick Moss and wanted to make him a big star for WWE and thought he could go all the way. I don't know how those hash out now, but also I do know that Heyman didn't necessarily want a lot of people to know that he was high on Riddick Moss, because you hear podcasts and the like about how sometimes Paul Heyman pushing for people ends up getting them de-pushed as a result, because that's the nature of how Vince McMahon is sometimes. Hope it works out for him, and hats off to him caring for his family member, because I really admire that. So last week there was a report, all due respect, Dave Meltzer, Wrestling Observer, he said virtually everyone had contacted AEW and WWE except for Roman Reigns. I had a few people in WWE reach out to me and say, no, that is not the case. I haven't, and I'm not going to. And then I reached out to a couple of people way high up that said that they hadn't. And then another one who said, well, if they count us like reaching out to our friends just to say hi, then yeah, but no, not otherwise, not for contracts. So I wanted to clarify that based on my experience. I mean, maybe all the people that he's talked to have, but that's not the case at least with the people that I spoke to. AEW retapes. The Britt Baker, Reba, Kip Sabian, and Penelope Ford segment that we saw backstage or wherever they filmed it was actually originally filmed in the ring, and we're told that AEW ended up reshooting it due to time constraints. There was a back elbow spot in the Dark Order match that had to be refilmed because one of the wrestlers got caught up in the ropes. Ivelisse and Diamante had to reshoot their entrance for the match, supposedly because cameras were out of place for it. Also, there was a Rey Mysterio mention that was edited off the August 22 edition of AEW Dynamite. Eddie Kingston mentioned Mysterio during his promo with Phoenix, Pentagon, Butcher, and The Blade, but it was removed from the show, and we were not given a reason why. Mysterio has been working in WWE without a contract of late. Speaking of contracts, as I mentioned, Tongaloa's contract is up soon. Go check out that interview. It is up now. But both Tongaloa and Tama Tonga told me the reason they never heard any stories about their father beating the living shit out of each other when they were young is because Haku never smartened them up to wrestling. And their mother even told many people their father was a truck driver because they didn't want people being their friends for the wrong reasons, because their dad had money or because he was famous or anything like that. And there wasn't a giant internet presence back then for these stories to go around. So most of the people that were hearing the stories about Haku beating ass or seeing it were the people there or older people that had internet access and were surfing the web all day. There wasn't a ton of social media or anything. So I thought that was pretty cool. That interview is a lot of fun. He confirmed to me, Tongaloa confirmed to me that his New Japan contract is up this year, and he had been on a one-year deal after never having a contract there. However, he says that New Japan has been very good about communicating with him and saying that they'd look at things after the pandemic, which he doesn't think is going anywhere anytime soon. But regardless, he said that platforms or he performs like he doesn't have a contract because he's been let go before, signed before, moved companies before, and that's just something that he learned working in WWE. And he said that he mentioned working with his brother was a dream come true for him. Even though they had before, it was never quite on the New Japan stage. Tonga had spent time in WWE and Impact Wrestling, but it said the transition to Japan was not that tough for him. The transition to not wrestling in Japan lately has been rougher for him because he's been missing it. He's working New Japan strong now, and he says that's a fun experience, but it's a very weird experience when you're able to hear commentary while you actually wrestle. And even though he deals with some quiet crowds in Japan, it's never so quiet that he can hear commentary. And he credits Japan with teaching him how to use his instincts more than thinking out this spot, this spot, this spot. He also noted to me that he hates chops, and he does not see the point in them. And I'm with him. I might do a full video on this, but the reason for the chop is because the closed fist punch used to be enforced as illegal. The reason the closed fist punch used to be enforced as illegal is because, and this is before MMA, everybody kind of knew a punch might knock you out. You don't want your match to be 5 seconds, 6 seconds. You want a good, entertaining match. I mean, some people would love a knockout. I love quick knockouts in MMA, but pro wrestling's a little bit different. Nobody gets marked up, nobody gets beat up, nobody breaks their hand, anything like that. So it becomes very clear that it's kind of fake. So you open up your hand for your punches. Okay, that makes everything last a little bit longer. You chop instead. That gives you a nice sound. It explains a lot of things. It's the same reason in Pancrase people used open hand punches. That's just why. I'll do a full video on that one day for the three of you that care. Talked to David Finley. He's made his impression felt within New Japan during the USA Cup, but actually wasn't under contract for several years in New Japan either. From 2015 to 2019, he told me that he worked on a handshake agreement with New Japan and told me that once All Elite Wrestling started up, New Japan was adamant about getting a contract, and he was happy to sign one. And he says that it's fortunate that he did because he got injured pretty quickly after that. Finley told me that he very well could have just had his father make a call to WWE when he started training, but he wanted to go a different route and earn things on his own merit, even though he's trained with his father and has a great relationship with him. He believes that Fit Finley could still wrestle. It's been 8 years since we've seen Fit Finley wrestle, but David says that his father trains with he and his brother every single week, and he thinks that he can still go, and maybe we'll see it. He's furloughed. He's out there. It could happen. I even threw out the idea of David Finley and Fit Finley against Tama Tonga or Tonga Loa, or Hikuleo for that matter, and Haku. I think that would be an interesting attraction for New Japan Strong on Fridays. He said that he's really enjoying the Strong brand and hopes that it's more of a permanent fixture. He's enjoying the competitiveness between New Japan USA and Japan right now because they effectively have a brand split, for better or for worse. This accelerated plans for New Japan Strong. The original plan, as Lance Archer told me earlier this year, was not for it to be a definitive brand split. It was to tour over here with a bunch of people that were just really, really good and to accentuate that with some more American talent and really gain a foothold in the States. However, due to the pandemic, things have changed. Oh, and have things changed. Let's get to the injury updates. Mickie James is back. She was in the ring for the first time in over a year last week. It was less than overwhelming. She said as much in her interview with Denise Salcedo. She makes sure you all check that out. Roman Reigns returned at WWE SummerSlam 2020, and what a return it was. Holy crap. He's been back here. He's back for the first time since roughly March, April, whenever it is that he decided to leave. So glad to see him back. Tommaso Ciampa has not been around in a couple of months. He is back this week on NXT, according to an advertisement on NXT TakeOver. We also got news that Gabriel Kidd was pulled from August New Japan shows. He's got a neck injury. But we also have some transaction updates. Jeff Cobb has said that he has signed somewhere, but is going to leave it up to that company to kind of put out there where he is, what he's doing. He says that it's on them. They're paying him, so they get to announce that. Goldberg, however, has said that he is signed through 2022 and is obligated to wrestling 2 matches a year. So that means that he has fulfilled his obligations for this year, wrestling The Fiend and wrestling and Braun Strowman. I hope they do not run back the Roman Reigns thing. If you want to do it, that's fine. If you want to have Goldberg challenge Roman Reigns for the title, that's fine. I do not need to see Bill Goldberg ever with a world championship ever again. Do I think they could find 4 fun, compelling matches to put Goldberg in? Yeah, I do. Do I think they need to be at the top of the card? No, I do not. I think that he is great celebrity mid-card fodder, quite frankly. I think he's good fodder for somebody. The Dolph Ziggler match, perfect. Loved it. Don't need to see him doing anything in the title picture. Hey, if he wants a challenge for it, sure. Put him in the Royal Rumble. That could be good. Davey Boy Smith Jr., his deal's up in December. He has told me he wants out of MLW, as has Brian Pillman. His deal is into 2021, July 2021. He wants his release as well, as do many in MLW. Speaking of transactions, we have a bit of another one. Keith Lee is going to be on Monday Night Raw. He has lost the NXT title. He vacated the North American title. I don't get that, why he vacated that. He could have just been in the ladder match, but he is going to be on Raw. That's really good. That show needs a little shot in the arm, so to speak. But I'm all for him coming up. There already wasn't a lot for him to do in NXT. There already just wasn't enough. I think he is better suited for the main roster. I really do. And that presentation that he's going to get accordingly. Because everything just seems so dark and drab in NXT around him. And it's a real spooky era with Damian Priest and Karrion Kross. But we'll see how that goes. Speaking of injuries and Karrion Kross, Triple H confirmed to me on Saturday night that Karrion Kross had separated his shoulder. That sucks. They're going to see how it ends up. We don't know anything about the timetable, the return, how serious it is, what they'll do with the title, but here's to hoping that he gets better soon. Let's get you some stats from the week. Monday ended Sasha and Bayley's 6-match winning streak together as a team. Their last loss was at the hands of Asuka and Charlotte Flair. Shelton Benjamin got pinned 3 times on Monday Night Raw. AJ Styles ends his Intercontinental title reign as the second oldest champ in WWE history after Ric Flair. If Jeff Hardy holds the title for 100 days, or quite frankly, wins the title at any point after that, he'll bypass Styles. Jeff Hardy became a 5-time Intercontinental champion. He has held titles in the company across 4 decades and has had 23 title reigns in WWE and another 5 in TNA since 1999. 28 title reigns across 21, 22 years. That's pretty nice. Every men's singles champion in AEW history thus far, outside of that FTW title, is by someone who has held the Intercontinental and Tag Team titles in WWE as well. Karrion Kross won the NXT Championship in just his 7th match with the company. Unbelievable. Keith Lee's NXT title reign was the 2nd shortest of all time, only behind Samoa Joe's 2nd reign. The same number of NXT champions actually lost their titles in the ring between July 1st and this weekend's TakeOver as the entire 2-year period that preceded it, all the way back to May 2018. This is because Tommaso Ciampa actually vacated his, so he did not lose it in the ring. There are still no 2-time NXT North American champions, but Velveteen Dream was in both the first ever North American title ladder match and this past week's. The 2 NXT title changes at Full Sail University are the first back-to-back title changes there since Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in 2014 to 2015. Before SummerSlam, Braun Strowman had not been pinned on a one-on-one televised match since September 2019, against Seth Rollins at Clash of Champions. Dominic Mysterio and Pat McAfee both had their first matches ever this weekend and lost. Mr. Brody Lee is an undefeated 4-0 since losing at Double or Nothing, and it only took him 3 minutes, 10 seconds to beat Cody. The Lucha Brothers have had one classic tag team match victory on AEW TV in 2020, and the rest are in 6, 8, or 10-man tags. SummerSlam was Drew McIntyre's first match in over a month, but he's undefeated in his last 24 one-on-one matches and hasn't been pinned in one since August 26, 2019, against Ricochet. Wow, that will be a year this week. He's also won 3 handicap or triple threat matches in that period and the Royal Rumble as well. But the last person to pin him in any capacity on TV was Roman Reigns at Survivor Series 19. At this point, we might have to call Seth Rollins Mr. SummerSlam because his record includes wins over Dominic Mysterio, Brock Lesnar for the Universal title, Dolph Ziggler for the IC title, The Bar for the Raw Tag Team titles, John Cena for the WWE World Heavyweight and U.S. titles, and one over Dean Ambrose. His lone loss there was to Finn Balor for the Universal title. Guys, thank you all so much. Keep it locked to Fightful.com. You know we're going to be bringing you news all week long. Thank you, guys. Until next time, we're out.